Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello. A very warm welcome to Tech Talk, RNIB Connect Radio's regular journey into the world of technology from a blindness and low vision perspective. I'm your host, Dave Williams, and it is a pleasure to be with you. If you've got any thoughts about technology, why not get in touch? You could send us an email or even a voice message to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk, T-E-C-H, talk. at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we hear all about Alana AI. And of course, we'll be doing our very best to answer some of your emails. So strap yourself in. That's all coming up this week on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman. How are you? What's grabbing your attention in the world of technology at the moment?
I've been looking through the announcements from the Amazon event that happened last week. They seem to keep that a bit quiet, but yeah, Amazon had a product event recently, and there's some pretty nice little announcements there for the upgrades to the Echoes. So there's a temperature sensor coming to the Echo Dot. I think that's been in the full-sized Echoes for a while, or at least the latest ones, but that's coming to the Echo Dot now, which is quite cool, because thanks to you know using routines, if you've got a smart heating system, like, you know, a Hive heating system, then you can set something that would say, you know, as soon as it gets to, I don't know, 20 degrees in this room. And then at that point, the heating would turn off without having to use additional hardware. You could just do that via your Echo Dot, which is quite nice.
And how's things with you, Tasneem?
Yes, very good. Thank you, Dave. Yeah, I've been having a little bit of a play with some more of the features on my iPhone 13 and really absolutely loving it, and also kind of having a look at the next model up, the iPhone 14, and just looking at those sort of features as well. It's got crash detection, which I thought was very interesting. Yeah, so if you happen to be in a crash, it kind of alerts and is aware of that, and I think that's an absolutely amazing feature, really, that Apple's brought out.
Yeah, somebody said to me the other week they were going to upgrade from their 13 to 14. I'm not convinced that going from one year to the next year is essential. But yeah, if you're thinking about upgrading your device, I'd be interested to know what that upgrade is and why and the reasons. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman, thanks very much. We've heard a lot recently about conversational artificial intelligence. These are systems that endeavour to understand the meaning of questions and requests that you make to your technology. And to help us understand the role of artificial intelligence in this area, we are joined by our friends at Alana. Hello, welcome in to Nihat and Oliver. Can I just get you both to introduce yourselves and just describe your roles at Alana? Let's start with you, Professor Oliver Lemon.
Hi, yes, I'm Oliver. I'm the Chief AI Officer and a co-founder at Alana AI. And I look after all aspects of advances in conversational artificial intelligence and how to understand and generate human language.
And Nihat?
Hi, so I'm the CEO of Alana AI and also one of the co-founders. I'm on the commercial side of the business, but also worked tightly with Oliver and the rest of the team to make sure that the technology is actually being put in people's hands.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, what is Alana AI?
Alana is redefining the way that humans and machines talk to each other. We're building the state of the art in terms of conversational AI, using natural language, understanding natural language programming, to effectively revolutionize the way that humans and machines talk to each other. We're building state-of-the-art technologies to combine all these different tool sets that are available in the technology or the latest technology stacks to essentially put together applications that will change and help people live independent lives. The application that we're building for the Royal Institute for the Blind in particular uses natural language understanding, natural language programming, and also vision. It combines all of those applications to help people live independent lives. So in a nutshell, Alana uses the state-of-the-art technologies in terms of artificial intelligence, and it puts it together to bring to life something that will effectively change the way that people live.
Where did the name Alana come from?
We entered a competition, the Amazon Alexa Prize, a few years back, and we were building a conversational system that we wanted to give a name to so that people could feel like they were talking to something with some kind of personality and so on. So we came up with this name kind of in reference to Alan Turing, who is one of these absolute pioneers of artificial intelligence and even invented something called the Turing test, which is a test for intelligence using conversational AI. So it was kind of a reference to Alan, Alan Turing. But I think the word Alana is also has a meaning in, I think it's in Gaelic language. It means something like beautiful one.
Many of us will be familiar with the idea of speech recognition, you know, on smart speakers and smartphones. We've had, you know, dictation software like, you know, sort of Dragon and things like that for many years. But this really is something quite different and something else. On the Alana website, you talk about creating conversational AI experiences. Can you elaborate on what that actually means?
Well, what we're trying to do is make useful or purposeful conversational AI, not just sort of chit-chat systems, but systems that you can really use to get things done, things that you care about. So you might be looking for some kind of information. You might be even looking for something you've lost in your house, like maybe you can't find your shoes or something like that. And we want to be able to do those kind of tasks through a conversational interaction, which is much more natural and easier and faster for people than, for example, having to type in a search or use pull down menus on a screen. And in some cases, it enables entirely new tasks to be done that you couldn't do before. For example, yes, visually searching a room or a house for a particular object. So what we're trying to build is conversational AI experiences which are companionable, interesting, engaging, but also useful for people.
Right. And clearly the technology industry as a whole has a huge interest in this area, you know, ways for you to access technology while perhaps your hands or eyes are otherwise occupied. What makes Alana unique?
I think what makes Alana stand out and what makes Alana unique is, I guess, the team behind Alana are some of the world's best minds. And I'm talking about Oliver Verena, Professor Oliver Verena, Yanis Konstas, and Dr. Yanis Konstas, and the rest of the team. So our team is working on developing state-of-the-art dialogue technologies. And I think combining those dialogue technologies, which is NLP, NLU, natural language understanding, natural language processing, and natural language generation, and combining that with vision AI, like no other that we are aware of, I think that makes Alana unique. It is combining technologies, and we're putting together this to provide, you know, a virtual assistant that can interact with both text and also with your surroundings. That is particularly useful in the case of partially sighted people, but also in the general kind of like sense of people being able to have something to talk to. So it doesn't necessarily only apply to blind and partially sighted people, but it has a wider application. So in terms of making Alana unique, as you know, your original question, I think it's our ability to combine these technologies together to provide you really useful, purposeful technologies for people, for everyone to use, frankly.
So at Alana, you're promising smoother dialogue, more intuitive responses, and the power of recollection to provide a more natural conversational experience. How does that compare with some of the voice assistants that we're already using in the blind community?
There's several things going on here where we're making, you know, advances over the kind of systems that people typically use. So in real life, people speak with all kinds of disfluencies and hesitations and restarts, and they repair what they previously said. So current voice systems really don't deal with those kinds of things very well at all. And it kind of means that users have to formulate what they want to say and then say it almost perfectly in order to get things done. So we're building technology that's much more robust to the real disfluent ways that people really speak in real life. So dialogue will be smoother in the sense of being a more closer to how humans are able to handle these kinds of disfluent and slightly noisy and messy real speech situations. The power of recollection is just, I guess, the fairly obvious idea that we remember what kind of what we've been talking about before in previous conversations with people. So, for example, we might remember that you're not really a big fan of, let's say, heavy metal music, but you're really interested in talking about fantasy novels or something like that. That would just be one example, of course. So we would keep a memory of things that you're interested in, not interested in, and be able to use that to make the conversation more tailored towards you and your interests. That's one example of the power of recollection.
I guess what I'm getting at, Oliver, is my Echo will do this to a very limited extent. You know, if I say order coffee, you know, she'll say, well, based on your order history, you want, you know, these coffee beans or whatever it is. So there's a sort of a crude example there. What's Alana doing that's kind of slightly more sophisticated, I guess?
Well, yeah, what we do is we keep a memory of the whole conversational context. So not just what you've previously ordered before in your actual order history, but even things like topics and people and places that you've been speaking about before. So it's a much more fine-grained memory and representation of what the conversation has been about. So what this particular conversation has been about, but also what previous conversations have been about. So what we're doing is actually, you know, tracking all of the topics and entities that people are speaking about. So it's not just tied to something like order history and so on. But there are other interesting things going on in this idea of keeping a context of the conversation. I think that's really a powerful idea, because the context of a conversation can also include what you can see in the room and what objects are around that you might want to talk about. And we really have in our system a very rich representation of the overall context of the conversation, and that enables us to drive much richer conversational experiences.
So for whom was Alana originally designed?
So initially, Alana was designed to have long-form conversations about multiple topics, as Oliver and I have mentioned in your previous questions. So the team were finalists concurrently for 2 years in the Amazon Alexa competition. I guess when we spun out the technology from Heriot Watt University, or the Interaction Lab, which Oliver runs, we were looking at use cases to complement our technology stack, but also complement our team's skills. So we decided to engage with the Royal Institute for the Blind to develop a companion application that can deliver this natural contextual conversation that we've been talking about. So using open source libraries and visual interpreter, we feel that this particular application has a really strong view on enabling people to live independent lives. So I guess, it is much broader than Alana being designed specifically for blind and partially sighted people, because there are other applications or other fields that we're looking at as well. But what is our key project within Alana at the moment is our visual dialogue companion, which we'll talk about in more detail a bit later.
Yeah, so you have been working with us here at RNIB. To what extent have you been aware of the needs of customers with disabilities during Alana's development?
Throughout our journey, since we engaged with RNIB, or RNIB's innovation team, the RNIB team steered our development progress. So focusing on all the different aspects of accessibility to users and their journeys, and how we should focus how Alana can help blind and partially sighted people. From a development perspective, we had experience in developing language models, right? We didn't have any experience, which we brought in later, but from the accessibility perspective, everything that Alana kind of delivers currently, or the test version of Alana that currently delivers the application that's available on iOS and Android, is all driven by the RNIB team. So I guess, you know, from meeting accessible standards both on iOS and Android, that was all Robin Spinks and John Worsfall. I guess there are other aspects of just literally how the customers would enjoy using the application, both from on the conversational side as well as the visual side. And I think they've been absolutely key to driving where the application is now. I mean, we are still very much in the infancy of where we think we will get to, but they've had an absolute key role in developing what we've got so far. So the voice companion that can add a lot of value, especially when it comes to information retrieval, is quite, you know, it can be relevant for many, many people. But specifically, the visual interpreter is designed for blind and partially sighted people. So we, of course, as I said, very, very early in our journey. And, you know, we will be sharing some further news later in terms of where we are.
You mentioned app accessibility. What other specific changes have been made to meet the particular needs of blind and partially sighted users? Are there particular topics or tasks that Alana now is dealing with that perhaps hadn't been in your original plan?
Sure. So Alana has the RNIBs, or the entire library of frequently asked questions, which people with sight loss have access to. We're also working with RNIB to have the talking books option, which people can literally say, Alana, I want to read this book, take me to this page. And with Alana's ability to have a little bit of context in the conversation, it will remember that from previous history, referring to, for example, you know, you read The Lord of the Rings, would you like something that similar with who that's been written by J.R. Tolkien or whatever. So it's that type of information which I think will be very useful. Currently in the contact center of RNIB, a lot of the calls that are made to RNIB are with regards to talking books, and that will also be made available through Alana in due course. And specifically with regards to the visual side, as I mentioned, you know, the things that we changed that we were not aware of is practically we're building a visual interpreter for blind and partially sighted people. So from, you know, seeing color, which we hadn't thought about at all in our initial scoping of the projects. To seeing, you know, the different types of clothes that there are, you know, that we wear, that we hadn't scoped out at the initial project roadmap. So there are things that we've completely added specifically for blind and partially sighted people. But you know, when we started the journey on building a visual interpreter, we specifically did that for blind and partially sighted people.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Face ID is Apple's latest way of unlocking their iPhones, and it's been around for quite a while on all the iPhones without a home button, which nowadays are less and less. It's just the SE models that have the home button and the Touch ID now, so Face ID is clearly becoming more available and more prominent. But how easy is it to use for a blind person? Well, Tasnee Marshad has given us a little demo of how to get started.
So let's see what happens when we go into the settings folder on the iPhone and then select Face ID and passcodes. So it has requested me to add in my passcode, which is what I've done. And now we're going to have a look to see what's in this menu here with Face ID and passcodes.
iPhone unlock. Use Face ID for heading. iPhone unlock. Off.
Okay, so that's off, so we need to turn that on.
Double tap on. Animation of a head gently moving in an outward facing circle.
Okay, so this is telling me...
At first, position your face in the camera frame. Then move your head in a circle to show all the angles of your face.
Okay, that's what I'm doing, so let's hope this is picking it up. So I'm doing that, but it's not giving me any voice guidance, which is a bit strange.
Get started.
Oh, maybe that's why I need to...
Get cancel. But hold the device in front of your face at a distance of 25 to 50 centimeters.
So I'm doing that. Moving it up, moving it closer, moving it further away. See what it's saying on screen.
Your face is out of view.
Okay, so this is what's happening. Your face is out of view.
Your face is out of view.
So, this is how not to do it, I guess.
How to first reposition your face within the frame. Position your face within the frame. Your face is out of view. Position correctly.
Oh.
Starting first scan.
Wow.
12% completed.
Finally managed it.
25% completed.
How about that? So VoiceOver has told me when it's positioned correctly.
Turn your head right. 38% completed. Attention. Require attention for Face ID. Off.
So that needs to be off.
True depth. Attention aware features. Off.
I don't know if that needs to be on or
Double
not.
Tap to toggle setting. On.
Maybe I'll put that on and let's see what happens if we try it again.
True depth. Require attention. Set up. Set up. Select. Cancel. Button.
So now I've got an idea of where to place the phone.
Animation. How to set first. Get started.
Let's hit get started.
Get cancel button. Move iPhone a little lower.
Okay, so I'm moving it lower.
First, how to set up faces.
So just give you the instructions. So let's
head
see.
Head position correctly.
Fantastic.
Starting first scan.
We've got it.
Move 25% completed. Turn your head right. 38% completed. Third, head positioned correctly. Starting first scan. Accessibility options. Button. 50% completed.
Let's see what it does this time round.
First faced scan complete.
So it's telling me the first ID part is complete. Face ID.
Move your head slowly to complete the circle.
So move your head slowly to complete the circle.
Move your head slowly to complete the circle.
So that's what I'm doing.
Move your head slowly to complete the circle. Face ID is now set up.
So it's telling me Face ID is now set up.
First, position your face in the camera frame. Done. First, position your face in the camera frame. Then move your head in a circle to show all the angles of your face.
So we will try that in a few moments. And then there's a done button.
Done.
Which you can hear. And hopefully that will all be set up. So VoiceOver gave me all the prompts. So every time I got something right, it would say that your head is positioned in the correct place, and then every time it made a request of me to move your head left, right, up or down, it then did another audio sound to indicate that you'd basically done that correctly, which was like a higher pitch sound, basically. That was really helpful because it's giving me audio prompts all the way through. So absolutely brilliant. So we'll now see how this second part goes now.
Reposition your face within the frame.
Okay, so let's try that.
Reposition your face within the frame.
So I'm moving my iPhone closer and then moving it away just to try and get a more of a central baseline.
Position your face within the frame. Your face is out of view.
Okay, that's not so helpful. I wonder what happens if I just hit the done button without it.
Reposition your face, done. Alert. Face it and voice over. Face it has been set up to verify your identity but not require that you look at iPhone to authenticate. This can be changed in Face it and passcode settings. Okay,
that's really good. So let's listen to that again.
Face it and voice over.
So it's come up when I've hit done. So despite the fact that it still requested me to reposition my face and follow the instructions of moving it left to right, there was the done button. I wasn't aware it was set up fully because it was still making that request. And then I hit done just to see what would happen. And this is the message that came up.
Face it has been set up to verify your identity but not require that you look at iPhone to authenticate.
So that's really good.
This
that's...
can be changed in Face it and passcode settings.
So that's really good. So I don't have to, there doesn't have to be any required attention, which is really helpful if you have minimal or no vision. So it will recognise my face and unlock the phone for me. So that'll be really helpful. But if I wanted that feature changing, then obviously I could. But I don't think that's really advisable, actually, unless you can see the screen or some parts of it.
Okay,
so let's press OK.
Wallet and app setting, face ID and password.
Okay, let's see what happens now if I lock my phone.
App setting, setting, set, set, settings.
Just go home.
Use face ID for iPhone unlock. On.
Okay, so that's on, so I'm happy with that.
Set ITV.
Okay, let's lock the phone. And let's see if it'll unlock it now. Tap to wake it up.
1:50 p.m. Sunday the 20th, unlocked.
Wow.
Torch, camera, camera. 1:51, Sunday 20th, unlocked.
It says unlocked.
Torch, camera. But camera, Callan, voice memo.
How about that? I am so impressed with that because up until this point, I've been putting in my PIN code and it's just literally unlocked the phone for me when I've looked at it. So, yeah, I am really impressed with Face ID and having set that up. Absolutely fantastic. So I hope that's given you a little bit of an idea of how to set up Face ID. It absolutely can be done. Does require some practice, and do be aware at the point where it's almost complete, it might still make that request of wanting you to still move your face from side to side, even though it's getting no audio prompts. I wasn't certain that it had completed, but actually it had, and happy days. So good luck if you're setting up Face ID, and do drop us a line if you're struggling at all at techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Tasneem Arshad demonstrating Face ID there. I mean, how easy do you find it, Tasneem, sort of day to day? Is it all right? Are you happy with it? I mean, I know it's accessible, don't we? I mean, I've tried it myself. I personally don't use it. We'll talk about that in a second. But how easy do you find it?
I'm fairly new to it. I'm very much loved my home button. So it took me a really long time to psychologically get used to the idea of Face ID. I actually went into the Apple store having already made my decision that I was going to buy the SE Touch ID. When I got in there and after having a chat and, you know, with the salespeople, I kind of thought, you know what, I am actually ready for this move. And I decided I was going to go for the 13 instead. And that's what I did. I do know quite a few other blind people who use Face ID, and they had said it's perfectly fine, it's accessible, it's doable. And I had previously, during lockdown, I had bought, I think it was an iPhone 10. And because I hated the ID, the Face ID so much, and I just didn't get along with it, I actually sent it back. So this was like my second attempt at, you know, trying to go for something that was a little bit more technologically advanced for me. I really didn't want to move away from the home button, but I thought, you know what, let's take a little risk here and see what happens, as I was more psychologically prepared to make that change. So yeah, I'm getting along with it okay. I think initially it still asks you to put your PIN number in, because it says Face ID. In order to enable it, you need the PIN code initially. But anytime after that, it's just about getting the angle right. Once your face is in the camera, you know, you hold it a certain distance away from you, it unlocks automatically and it makes an audible sound. So you can actually hear your phone is unlocked, as well as the voiceover alerting you to the fact that it is when you're moving your finger around the screen. So yeah, I'm getting there with it. I think the only downside I would say is that, and this has actually happened to me with the iPhone 10, which is part of the reason I sent it back, was that I was sat in the bank in branch with a friend, and I was doing some level of banking. They picked up my phone with Face ID. It was locked. They just put it in front of me, and they did it in with the best of intentions of helping me. It unlocked my phone, and that kind of scared me a bit, because I thought, you know what, how safe is this? You know, and that kind of just brought some alarm bells in my mind. If anybody can pick up your phone and just put it in front of you, you don't see that. Luckily, this was a very different situation where I was aware of the context and everything that was happening. But I think that would be the only downside for me, is if somebody had picked up my phone and they just put it in front of me, I hadn't seen it, it had unlocked it, and away they go with my phone.
Face ID has been with us for 4 years now, and clearly Touch ID hasn't gone away, as was mentioned earlier. It's Touch ID is still on the iPhone SE. You can get Touch ID and the power button on some of the iPads. There's Touch ID on some of the MacBooks. Callum Stoneman, why are we still talking about this subject 4 years on?
I don't know. I wonder if it's a bit of nervousness for a lot of blind people, because the whole thing with Face ID, especially when Apple demo it in their presentations, they mention how it's assessing all angles of your face, and it's assessing your eyes, and it's making sure that your eyes are paying attention to the screen, which you can disable. I think it does it automatically. If you've got VoiceOver enabled, it will say, we've disabled the attention aware feature, which basically just means that your eyes don't have to be necessarily focused on the camera like they would for a sight person. For me personally, I've got that turned on, and I still find it works okay, even though I've got no vision whatsoever. So, I mean, that could kind of help with the whole thing of someone being able to hold it in front of them, hold it in front of you and unlock it, as Tasney mentioned just there. But I don't know, I think there's a little bit of nervousness of, you know, will this be accessible? Will this work? And I think some people don't realise that you can fall back to the PIN as well. If Face ID isn't working for whatever reason, it will give you, after two or three attempts, it will bring up the passcode field, and you can go back to entering a passcode.
The really positive thing is we can make a decision based on our own personal preference. This is not an accessibility issue, as far as I can tell. Face ID works perfectly well. I've tried it myself in store. I know lots of blind and partially sighted people successfully using Face ID to unlock their phone and make payments every day. I've decided I just don't want to use it. I like to be able to unlock my phone in my pocket when it's raining. I like to be able to reach out in the middle of the night and unlock my phone with my finger if I want to check something. I don't want to always have to lift that phone in front of my face. And like you, Taz, you know, I do think about situations where somebody might hold it up in front of my face and able to unlock it. But then I suppose someone could grab your finger, I don't know. Any final thoughts on this?
I think what's really interesting, Callum, is what you said about the voiceover automatically switching off the feature that wants you to look at the phone, the attention feature. Now, when I did this on my iPhone 13, it didn't switch it off automatically. I had to manually go into it. and switch that off. And previously, when I've used that feature, I just didn't get along with it at all. So that's really interesting to hear your views on it. And you know what? I might actually go back and try and turn that on, because it will help with the security aspect of it. So thanks for that tip, Callum.
Let us know your thoughts about Touch ID, Face ID. Now we've had Face ID for 4 years. What do you think? Are you like me? Are you still clinging on to Touch ID, or do you care? Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. Callum, Tasneem, thanks very much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've received an email from Hamish McKenzie, listening to us from Australia. Blimey, this show does get around the world. And Hamish writes in about the difficulty that some of us have with double tapping on the iPhone. And one suggested workaround we have made previously is to split tap, where you apply one finger to the screen and then add a second finger, and that will be the equivalent of performing a single finger double tap. However, Hamish points out that if you go into the VoiceOver settings, you can change the timeout for the double tap. And so you can increase the amount of time that the phone will wait for that second tap. So that's a really top tip. Thank you very much, Hamish McKenzie. Kay has been in touch about the Hable One demonstrated by Megan Paul a couple of weeks ago. Kay points out that the price for Hable One has increased since the demonstration. I guess we're all dealing with increasing prices in all sorts of areas at the moment. But yes, assistive technology can be expensive, particularly if you're funding that yourself. And if you're in the UK, it may, of course, be worth visiting rnib.org.uk/grants to find out about grants and what might be available to help with cost. And Callum, I mean, you were looking at the Hable One. Kay also says that she feels bad for Megan, because there is a command you can perform to reverse the keys, so you don't feel like you're writing upside down.
Yeah, and it's good tips. You know, it's a good thing to look at, that you can reverse the keys, and then if you do feel that method of brailing doesn't work for you, then yeah, try that. Try swapping them around.
Yeah, and Andrew McKay also makes a similar point. You can change the orientation of the buttons on the Hable One. So we'll make sure that Megan hears that feedback. Thanks, both of you, Kay and Andrew McKay. We'd love to get your emails. You can write in or even record us a voice message and send that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
We return now to Dave's discussion with Alana AI.
Professor Oliver Lemon, earlier you referenced the Turing test, this idea that in a conversation, the responses of a machine would be indistinguishable from those of a human. I don't know how much I want my machines to behave like humans, or how much I want my humans to behave like machines. But what are some of the challenges or some of the more difficult challenges facing conversational AI? I mean, you talked about the Turing test as being almost like the grail. What are the sort of the frontiers, the really difficult problems that conversational AI has to solve?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's still a lot of problems that remain at least partially unsolved. I mean, really deeply understanding human language is not a solved problem. We can understand fairly simple things, you know, like, you know, I'm interested in Lord of the Rings, and questions like, you know, who starred in Lord of the Rings, these kind of things, where it's fairly simple to actually understand what's being asked. But in a free-flowing conversation, you can have very long utterances by people that are very complex, and we're absolutely not able to fully understand the depth of those kinds of utterances. So that's one. Really understanding human language is one of the big frontiers. People are still, you know, obviously working on different aspects of that. And then the issue which always fascinated me is, how do you decide to say what to say next in a conversation? So there are many different things you could do next in a conversation. You can switch topic or continue drilling down into another topic that you've already been talking about, or maybe you can talk about something in the visual scene that's interesting. And basically this decision problem of what to say next is really, really difficult. And we've tried to approach that through different machine learning methods to try to figure out, for example, what's the best thing I could say next in this conversation, for example, to help somebody achieve their goals. So those are two challenges for general conversational systems. And the challenges I'm really interested in as well involve the visual and spatial context. So, for example, how do you describe the location of an object in a way which is really useful to somebody who, for example, might be partially sighted? You're trying to optimize how you talk about objects in space. And that's a really interesting problem that we're currently trying to address in Alana.
And to tackle some of these challenges, of course, you have to gather and analyze a lot of audio and visual information. What would you say to somebody who's concerned about privacy and how their data is handled and protected?
I guess from our perspective, we're quite open about that. So while we understand privacy concerns, we must also compromise when it comes to projects that we can consider, you know, AI for good. You know, technologies will benefit not only the, you know, this generation, but the generations to come. We have to train our models. There is nothing we can do in order to, you know, make the machines actually see and describe things, and also make the machines talk in a, you know, human-like or natural as we can type of conversation. So from Alana's perspective, we're quite open. We use data and we use your data, but we have a strict policy on keeping personal data or exploiting personal data. So we have an end-to-end system which is encrypted, and it will prevent any potential leaks going forward. But, you know, there is a sense of, we have our libraries in the background, which you know, understand where, you know, what a cup looks like, or understands a color that, you know, that's red, understands, you know, when the camera sees a TV. But there is a sense of, you know, the camera needs, you know, if you want a visual assistance, the camera also needs to see your TV. So there is a sense of privacy, I guess, to a certain degree. But I think the benefits far outweigh the privacy concerns. And I think this is, you know, we're building something which will benefit not only this generation, but the many, many generations to come. And we're potentially just at the beginning of this frontier. So that would be my question, my answer. Do you have anything else to add, Oliver, potentially?
Yeah, so I mean, it's obviously this really important issue, and it's an issue that's just faced by all of the technology companies who work in speech. And we follow, you know, the same kinds of guidelines where we don't keep recordings of people's speech, and we anonymize all of the data that we collect. So there's always a trade-off between some aspects of privacy and how useful an application can be for people, obviously. But yeah, we don't keep voice recordings, and we anonymize all the data. So it's an ongoing process, and this will evolve, as with all technology companies in this area.
At RNIB, we often hear about how sight loss can be isolating. What's the role of conversational AI in challenging social isolation?
So yeah, we've actually had a bit of experience of this that was one of the inspirations behind, you know, spinning out this technology into real life, which is that during the Amazon Alexa challenge that which we took part in, our system was deployed across North America for 2 years. And when we were looking at some of the conversations we had with real people, some of the people were saying things like, you know, oh, it's so great I can talk to you every day because you're like a friend and I get lonely sometimes. So we directly experienced that people were treating our system like a kind of companion. And this is also, there are other conversational systems which there's been quite strong evidence that some people at least find it engaging and interesting and fun to talk to these systems, even though they know they're not real people. So what we're trying to do is explore the extent to which, you know, some aspects of isolation can be ameliorated, I guess, by having the ability just to talk, have a kind of supportive and friendly chat with this rather knowledgeable AI system that can actually tell you things you didn't know before. And that's an experience I've had myself, which I personally find really fun and engaging, is that you can actually learn things from talking to Alana. You can explore topics and find out new information, get even new recommendations for music and books to read and this kind of stuff. So I think we're at the stages of exploring the potential of this kind of technology to be able to help with at least some aspects of isolation. And another thing I'm interested in is how you can bridge the gap between the virtual world and the real world. So Alana could, for example, recommend you real people to talk to and meet in real life and enable a bridge between virtual world and the real world. So these are all, you know, really interesting and exciting directions that I think have quite a lot of potential, that we're very excited to explore them.
Someone said to me the other day they heard their smart speaker say, "I am here, you know," and I couldn't help wondering off the back of that whether eventually we might get to a place where the AIs may feel slightly lonely. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that we've not touched on that either of you wanted to add at this point?
So yeah, I think it'd be great to give everybody an update in terms of where we are with actual development, if you don't mind, David. So I think we recently released an early version of Alana to select community of blind and partially sighted people. Their feedback has been providing, you know, really useful and helpful insight into how we can improve Alana. We're aiming to increase that testing group and, by the end of this year, we'll have a more clearer update in terms of where we are with building this technology and when exactly the launch will happen. So I think that would be the only bit I'd add to it.
And was there anything else from you, Oliver Lemon?
I'd just like to say we're really grateful to our testers that we have, that we're working with right now. We get a lot of insights from people who are currently testing Alana, playing around with it, and giving us a lot of very, very useful feedback on how we can further develop and make this technology even better. So I'd like to thank our testers and to encourage more people to please get involved and help to shape the future of this technology.
And if our listeners want to find out more, how can they do that?
Please visit our website, which is alanaai.com. And as Oliver just mentioned at the end, we're always looking for experienced technology testers, or even just technology testers, frankly, who are interested in supporting this game-changing project. So if you've got some experience, or if you would like to help us test the application and give us feedback about the application, write to us at hello@alanaai.com.
hello@alanaai.com. Nihat Krishnicki and Professor Oliver Lemon from Alana, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for having us. It was great talking to you.
And that brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you very much for sticking with us. Next time, we will be exploring technology used by people with low vision. Very aware that we do quite a lot on sort of talking devices and braille devices on this program, so we need to put that right. So we will be doing just that on the next Tech Talk. So Tasneem Arshad, Callum Stoneman, thanks very much for your contributions. See you next week.
You're very welcome. Bye for now.
Thank you. See you next week.
And from me, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, bye-bye.